Hey everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast. Hey, I got a couple of big shows coming up I want to tell you all about. Starting off, this summer, June 22nd, we're celebrating 5 years of Rock Paper Podcast at the 5th annual birthday show being held at Broadway Oyster Bar. Again, June 22nd, I'll be bringing along Amanda Fish Band, Tony Campanella Band, and Odds Lane. Music will start about 10. It's an $8 cover for that show. So come on out and join us for some great live music. Plenty of cold drinks and all kinds of delicious food from Broadway Oyster Bar. Also coming up Tuesday night on May 14th, I'll be out at Naked Vine for my singer-songwriter storytelling showcase featuring Karen Choi, Billy Crogan, and Tony Compton. That's a 7 o'clock start, $5 at the door. And we do that every second Tuesday of the month. Let me tell you about my friends over there at Naked Vine. They're always serving up the best wine, whiskey, tequila, and local craft beers. And you can come visit them in Chesterfield, Missouri for some great live local music on Thursday, May 16th. Phil and Carson of the Scandaleros will be out there. On May 17th, Friday night, Cree Rider Band and Gin Strings. And Saturday, May 18th, Find a Drive and Gin Strings. Double dose of Gin Strings this weekend down there, so come on by. You can find all this information and more on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, nakedvine.net. And also want to let you know about my friends over at Joseph Meyer Club. If you haven't checked it out yet, they have this great product. It's an aftershave. It's a foaming aftershave that I've been using, and I love it, and I think you will too. Head over to josephmeyerclub.com. Follow them on Facebook also. And when you enter RPPJMC20 at checkout, you can receive an exclusive 20% off of your purchase. And there's always free shipping, so keep that in mind. But again, RPPJMC20 at checkout at josephmeyerclub.com. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening. Hope to see you out of some of these shows coming up. And have a great day.
Podcast is kind of like it's like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
This is Daniel W. Wright, a.k.a. Damn Wright, and you're listening to Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.
Hey, everybody. Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from St. Louis, Missouri. Hanging out today with Daniel Wright. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Happy to be here.
This is cool, man. Anybody that's been following this show for I say it a lot, which is cool that it is still happening today, that we keep continuing to meet new people. But you're a guy I've been kind of following around a little bit through through social media, and I've seen you at a bunch of shows, and we have some mutual friends, obviously, in the music community and things. But we never really had a conversation. We've said, hey, but like that's about it. So this is what's kind of cool about this show is it allows us to have this opportunity to sit down and get to know a little bit more about what you're up to and everything else. And for me, where instead of trying to scream over Brother Lee and the Leather Jackals or something like that, we can actually have a conversation and talk and in the comfort of your home here. So.
I'm happy to do this. I've been following Rock Paper Podcast for a while and been seeing a lot of bands who I look up to, a lot of bands who I respect doing this. So this is sort of a little personal thing for myself to get on Rock Paper Podcast.
Oh, nice. Well, thank you. Thanks, man. Yeah. I don't know a lot about Dan Wright. I do know that you've been, like I said, Brother Lee's a mutual friend of ours. I know you've done some stuff with them and some writing or some readings at some of their shows and different stuff. And So I've definitely seen your name a lot around in the community and stuff, but I guess take me back to the beginning, though. Like, does Dan Wright, you grew up here in St. Louis or moved here?
Yeah, I was born in Chicago, but I moved down here to, well, specifically to North County when I was 3 years old, like 87. And from there, I just basically spent, you know, the next, you know, 20 years or so living in North County, first Ferguson and then Florissant. Went to, you know, school there, was, you know, as with, you know, a lot of artists, you know, was, you know, the sort of social outcast. You know, I was the kid who always hid in the library. And, you know, eventually just, you know, when I was about 17 or so, kind of began going through, you know, my punk phase, like, you know, a lot of people do, and began just sort of learning about, you know, just culture and scenes, and I began to feel just sort of dissatisfied that something like that wasn't happening in St. Louis. But in fairness, there was. It's just when you're, you know, off in the county, that, you know, St. Louis may as well be another planet, mm-hmm. you know, let alone just like a 20-minute drive.
Yeah.
But, you know, moved out to, you know, to South City in 2011, and have been having one hell of a time ever since. And the cool thing about the time that I moved in was that was around the time that a lot of other people were coming in, and it seemed like the scene that sort of exists right now, it just started like on the peripheral, you know, about maybe 12 years ago. They were all just sort of, you know, what I learned, especially with the STL Here and Now documentary that Neil mm-hmm. Luke did, that they were all just people just sort of, you know, performing in coffee shops and their little edge of, you know, literally the edge of, you know, the suburbs of St. Louis on both sides. And then finally, we all sort of came to St. Louis, to the South City area, and just sort of met each other around sort of the same time period.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was like, I don't know. It's been discussed a lot on this show and many others, but like, there's just like something really cool happening right now in St. Louis. Like, I mean, and it's been bubbling for several years, like you're saying. Like, but there's a lot of really special, talented people around town, and it's been really cool to kind of be a part of it all. Like, but yeah, that's kind of cool that, like you're saying, how you kind of all kind of moved in around the same mm-hmm. time and then become friends and stuff. Yeah. Through,
like, for myself, I almost kind of like, granted, on a lower key, you know, sort of. Whatever, you know, I almost kind of compare it to how Paris was in the 20s, that, you know, a lot of people just came here because, you know, even people from out of town, you know, in other states come to St. Louis because it's still cheap to live here. And artists always need, like, that sort of place where they can focus on their art. They don't have to worry about money so much. And St. Louis is probably one of those last sort of bastions of, like, a city that is an actual big city that, you know, you can kind of feel free to do whatever, because we're sort of, in a sense, uncharted territory. Like, you know, people know Nelly, people know Chuck Berry, people know a handful of artists, but they never really know just how deep the talent chart is in this city.
Yeah. Well, just like you were saying earlier, though, like, that's a lot of how I was, like, growing up. Also, like, I was getting into music a little bit a couple of my friends like started playing original music out and more into the like modern rock scene and stuff, and then started playing like down at Pops and like, but that was like all I really knew of like St. Louis music. I didn't really know all this existed, you know, like you're saying. I was right. I lived out in the county also. I lived out in St. Charles County. Mm-hmm. So like you're saying, St. Louis City was like forever, you know, away for me. Yeah. And like, but as I started following those guys, and then like kind of the snowball grew, you know, like I started meeting more and more bands every time they played out, and they, you know, kind of started that networking. But, you know, I was completely unaware that anything was going on in St. Louis music besides, of course, like you're saying, like Nelly being on the radio and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it was kind of crazy, like, to think that, like, kind of moving into this and like not really having any idea what was going on, and then like, kind of get like, it's just kind of naive, I guess, you know. I was young, I didn't know any better, but like to like then deep dive into this, and like now, you know, meet all these people. Like, it's really, right. really cool. Like 700 something of these later, these podcasts. Yeah. But like I said, man, there's that was sort of how the when I started doing those lists of like shows in town and stuff too. Like, that's kind of been a real like nice marker for me to kind of document it all too, because when I started doing those, it was like everybody was saying there's nothing to do in St. Louis, and I'm like, oh, you guys are wrong. I'm gonna show you. I started putting these lists together, just, you know, mainly it was Friday and Saturday and at the time, and then it was like 3 or 4 or 5 whatever, and then all of a sudden, like, as it kept growing, now I'm putting like 50-60 thing shows on a Friday Saturday right. night in town sometimes, and in the greater St. Louis area.
Well, and that's an amazing, that's a good problem for us to have, is that, you know, when spring and summer get going, because it seems like from like March 20th to Labor Day, there's always like 10 million things to do. And it's that great problem of like, oh shoot, such and such is playing down at the Heavy Anchor, but then this other band's going to be playing in Off-Broadway, but then there's this other band that's going to be playing, you know, wherever. So it's like, oh, like, and you only have so much money. So it's like, oh, well, could maybe this person get me in for free and then I'll pay to go to this show, or maybe we can stick around and then you almost have to like strategically plan your weekends now to be like, you know, how much can we see as much as possible
right.
with maybe what little money we have.
Yeah, well, luckily most of them are like free a lot of times. There's a ton of free shows, or $5 or whatever, so like, I mean, and what's nice too is like, for me, like I'll usually go to an early show and then wind up down on Broadway at, you know, and shut down Oyster Bar and stuff, and then they go music to at least two. So that's a good way for me to kind of how I am able to catch as many shows as possible and stuff. At least I catch some of them. But yeah, man, that's like I said, it is definitely a good problem to have that we have that much music going on. But
well, yeah, I think last time I saw you was kind of similar circumstances where Nene from Mammoth Piano and I had kind of put together this Roaring Twenties show, which had just a plethora of amazing acts. And then right when I was done, I popped over to CB's because the Leather Jackals were going to be playing. Yeah. I think it was the weekend of 420.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that was a fun. That was last time we ran into each other, and that was a fun night over there. And then I think I caught a little bit of that the Brother Lee show. I ended up going to Venice for a minute, and then I went to Oyster Bar for the late set with Sean Cannon over there. And
oh, nice.
So getting my weekend fill of all St. Louis music going around, and
yeah,
and yeah, it was 420. Sean did like a 420 themed show, played all like these weed songs and they did like, you know, Rick James, Mary Jane, and Afro Man, Because I Got High, and smoked two joints from Sublime, and like, you know, just like all these songs, and like that, a lot of them I never would have thought I would hear Sean Cannon's Voodoo Player singing, but it was a lot of fun, man. We had a real good time over there.
I'm curious, did they play a Reefer Man by Cab Calloway?
Not that I heard. I'm not sure what it was on the first set, but this, I caught all the second set, and I can't remember what all now there was on that, but there was some really good ones. They did the Gourds version of Gin and Juice, like the kind of a bluegrassy version. Yeah, it was a lot of fun too to hear that.
Oh yeah, I'm quite familiar with that.
Right. Yeah. So, tell me, you were talking about you being in school, you're kind of in the library and stuff. Was that when a lot of the writing started for you, or?
I mean, I've always sort of, you know, been called towards like literature. I mean, you know, again, being sort of an outcast, like I've always kind of been socially awkward, so don't really know how to talk to people. And an escape for me was always literature. You know, I read these sort of like cheap kid-friendly versions of classics that my mom would pick up for me, and just got to know like the sort of, you know, basic greats, you know, Three Musketeers, you know, King Arthur, Frankenstein, you know, so on and so forth. But, you know, the writing, I think, really started when I got into high school, because it was the first time that, like, you know, I started to see people actually participating in the arts. There was a weirdly a kind of, I don't want to say thriving, but the, you know, the arts were very much encouraged in where I went to high school, which was McClure North. I, you know, had amazing teachers there who kind of pushed us all along, and you know looking back, it's weird how, like, that one little era of time that I went to that school has so many people who have IMDb pages.
Oh, yeah.
Because there were a lot of really great actors and actresses, painters, and, you know, poets and, you know, writers who all have had sort of varying degrees of success. But it really only happened once, you know, I saw that, you know, these thoughts I had weren't that out there, you know, because, you know, you're being in the county, is that, you know, if you have a thought that isn't a thought that a million other people have, that you kind of keep that thought to yourself because you don't want to be looked at as being the weird kid.
Right.
Unfortunately, I have no filter. and that sometimes got me, you know, I've always said that, you know, I'm kind of like a cross between Kramer and George from Seinfeld. Just, I fall ass backwards into trouble without even thinking about it. And I just sort of make the most of it. It's like, okay, that happened.
Right.
You know, Larry David is my spirit animal. but, you know, also, because of just, like, what my upbringing was, like, comedy also kind of played a part in that. And actually, one of the first comedians that I kind of gravitated to, even before, you know, Larry David, was, you familiar at all with, a comedian named Christopher Titus?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was watching his show, like, back when it was on Fox, yeah. when you could actually find it, when it wasn't, like, sure, switched around, because Fox was notorious for that. But, like, hearing that sort of narrative-type sitcom, mm-hmm, kind of instilled in me, like, how I could write, how I could sort of tell something very dark and depressing under, you know, normal conditions and kind of make a joke out of it. And that sort of, like, kind of got me to do it. And by the time I moved out to, you know, South City, my writing really sort of took off when, like, you know, I'd started just being in, like, a bunch of bands, and I always wound up being the de facto songwriter just because I love writing lyrics. I didn't realize at the time, but, you know, I was basically writing my earliest poems, which were absolute shit. But, you know, everyone starts off somewhere.
Right.
But, you know, one day just sort of the muse of making music just sort of left me. Just, like, I picked up my guitar one day and I knew all the chords and I knew what could go with what, but it's almost like that sort of extra magic of what makes a song was just not there anymore. And so instead, like, I thought, well, I have all these lyrics. I've always kind of preferred the writing part anyway. Screw it. You know, and I just started turning a lot of it into poetry. And around that same time, I got an opportunity from Evan Salt, who at that time was the editor of 11 Magazine. I ran into him and Paige Brubeck after they had done an RFT showcase, Sleepy Kitty set. And I told him about this great band that I had seen at the Heavy Anger the night before. And I said, you know, 11 should really do something about him, without blinking an eye. He goes, Dan, you do it. Give me 350 words by such and such a date, and, you know, we'll run it. And it was just as simple as that. And it was sort of like, you know, the dam burst. Like, as soon as I, you know, started that, just there was no turning back. And mm-hmm, that's kind of really when, like, the writing had been building from, like, the time I was a teenager up until that moment, but being given the verbal go-ahead was, at that point, pretty much all I needed, and I haven't looked back since.
Yeah. Very cool, man. I sort of, I can relate a little bit, like, not, I don't know, I've never been a published author in a mm-hmm magazine and, you know, and different things, but, like, but writing was always kind of there for me, too. I did a little bit of writing, like, poetry a little bit in high school and stuff. Started writing for the school paper. Mainly they kind of recruited me because, like, I was in it. They were interviewing me a lot for different, you know, pull quotes and different things, mm-hmm, for some of these different things, because I was pretty heavily involved in our high school, and plus it was a small school, mm-hmm, so we but anyway, so then my senior year I started writing for the paper. And so I've always kind of liked writing, and then I started writing a blog when I started really getting into music in St. Louis and just trying to do like album review type of things, trying to help my friends out. And then I kind of got some attention for that, and then I started writing for this website that was like a radio station stuff, and they kind of wanted just some online content, and I was like, all right, I can do that. And so I started writing for them, and all that was going pretty well. But I know, it's like for me, it was I didn't know enough words to like describe a guitar solos and different things or whatever, how it makes me feel. It was I wanted more people just to listen to it. And at that time, I started listening to a lot more podcasting, and that's where I could move into this more of an audio format. So it's kind of cool to hear that you took that approach and just ran with it though. But for me, like it's, you know, like I said, music's always been more the front. And so that's where I kind of wanted to move in that direction. But it's great that, Evan gave you that opportunity, man, like, and kind of help light that fire.
Well, yeah. And most of the sort of breaks that I've gotten in life, it's because like someone just made a lightning decision, which kind of says to me that, you know, in a sense, like, you know, you don't need sort of a board to make a decision. You just need one person who may be in kind of a position of power to just give you the ball. And it's like, here, let's see if you can run with it. Mm-hmm. And that sort of leap of faith is often what, you know, lets people create great art, because if someone knows that, you know, okay, I'm going to trust you. You know, if you are a hardworking person, you're going to take that trust. You're going to try to make the best out of it.
Yeah, for sure, man. So you wrote for 11 for a while then, I guess?
Yeah, from 2000... God, it's... I think 2013 to 2016 when they unfortunately had to shut doors.
Yeah. And it was mainly talking about bands, or did you...
I had tried on my... MySpace page, which shows you how far back it goes, to write about just great bands I saw that were based in North County, which at that time was a Circus Window, Men Working in Trees, Dino Fight, and maybe like one or two others, the Chaotix, and Central City Heroes, and so on and so forth, and maybe one or two others, but... You know, they were bands that were sort of doing their own thing, and a big gig for those bands would be to play Cicero's, you know, provided they didn't pull their, you know, pay-to-play nonsense. And, you know, that was sort of a thing for a little bit, but I never really thought I could sort of make a living off of it. And when I got this opportunity... Right around that time was when the bands who we all know and love now were just starting to rise through the ranks, and I was out at shows maybe 6 nights a week, you know, just always wanting something to do. And, you know, I was working at City Museum at the time, so I always heard about stuff that was happening. And also around that time was the time that the first iteration of Livery Company, which is now where San Lou is, opened up, and they were sort of a beacon of light that everyone just seemed drawn to, in a sense. Because, you know, I had done open mics, and I had known Fred Friction and maybe, like, you know, Ellen Cook and Langan and a few people, but I'd never really known the scene on the scope of what it is today. And that's, you know, the first place where I heard Old Souls Revival, where I, you know, got drunk with, you know, bunch of the people who are now members of Traveling Sound Machine, of, you know, where I got to meet most of the people who are now in Sorry Scout, and, you know, obviously, you know, Miss Molly Sims and the Manus Brothers and almost like every band in St. Louis at this point that traveled through the Livery. And I kept on looking around, and a lot of the journalism at the time, no one was really covering these great bands. And, you know, I even tried submitting a few things to the RFT, which they didn't take. And I thought, well, I've been given a platform here. And I, you know, as I was saying, you know, wanted to prove to Evan that I could, you know, run with the ball he gave me. So screw it. No one else is talking about these great bands I love. I'm going to write about these bands. And that just started, you know, sort of the process. And at the time, my two biggest sort of literary idols in terms of journalism were Hunter Thompson and Lester Bangs. So I thought, you know, I'm going to take their sort of style, modernize it, put my own inflection into it, and write about why these bands are so great. And, you know, when I was told to write about, you know, a show, it gets to be too objective and it takes the fun out of being at a show. So I decided to take a sort of gonzo-like approach and just write about what my experience is at that show. If someone spilled a beer on me, I was going to write about, you know, someone spilling a beer on me. You know, if someone was trying to talk into my ear while I was trying to listen to the music, I'm going to talk about that. Just stuff that would, when it appears on the page, you kind of get a sense of what that actual show in that one moment was like.
Yeah.
Which, you know, some people do, but I feel like not enough are doing.
Mm-hmm. When do you start writing more of your original stuff then? I mean, is that starting while you're writing about bands too?
I already had like a small collection of poems that I just sort of set aside. And in 2014, I published my first book, which was just a small little chapbook called Working Bohemians, Blues, and Other Poems. That was the stuff that, you know, from like a small period of like 2009 to 2014 that I felt really strong about. Like, they, you know, at the time I was also writing sort of lyrics, but didn't really know what to do with it. Mm-hmm. And eventually I just sort of cobbled it all together and they became like this small little thing of poems. And I put that out in, I think, July of 2014. And the response to it was positive enough that I started, you know, just diving headfirst into writing poetry. I wrote my first attempt at a novel that fall. It took me like 6 weeks to get through the first draft. And I was just, you know, a machine at that point. And also at that point was when, after I put out the first book, was when I started to meet a lot of people who kind of became the sort of writer, the current writer scene in St. Louis, Denmark Lane and R.C. Patterson, a gentleman named Hart LaCour, Aiko Sachita, Grace McGinnis, Sierra Lowe, Emily Rosen, and later, you know, the people who are associated with Bad Jacket. But, you know, that initial five, sometimes six or seven of myself, Denmark, RC, Hart, Aiko, Sierra, and Emily Rosen, like, we would all do open mic at Venice Cafe. It would almost be sort of like this weekly process of, like, Tuesday, at least for me, was sort of the day off. And then Wednesdays, then, there were two open mics. And this is now in 2015, so Livery had moved to the second location by this point. We would do extra open mic with Tracy Swigert at Shameless Grounds, which was great because you could just sort of say whatever you want. Like, there was, you know, the weirder the better was sort of, you know, the idea they had there. And then that would be done by 10 o'clock. We would all get into a couple cars, drive down to Livery, the second iteration of Livery Company, which is the old Radio Cherokee building, and Fred Friction would have his open mic there. And that was almost sort of trial by fire, because by 10 o'clock at, you know, Livery, everyone's pretty well lit by that point.
Right.
You know, they're about as lit as an Indian holiday. And, you know, you all have, you know, just this thing of a bunch of drunk, loud people all trying to talk over each other. And you don't have a guitar. So what do you do when you're given that spot and you just have your voice to try to talk over these loud, rowdy people? You say the most poetically wild stuff possible just to get their attention. Because a conversation with the drunk is probably one of the best literary tools you can have. Because you only got 15 seconds to get their attention. So you got to say something good and you got to make it count. And that sort of like made, like, at least for myself, and I think I can speak for those other writers, it's sort of the same process where, you know, just the usual sort of poetic nonsense that you would write down just got chucked out the window. And it was almost sort of like the poetry of Charles Bukowski, where just you get down to just the absolute heart of the matter, no bullshit, and you get to something that is real, something that is true, and that's what always is going to grab people's attention. That's why people love, the bands that everyone's crazy about now, is because, if you get right away from the smoke and mirrors, you get to something that is true, people are always going to resonate with that. People are always going to be drawn towards that. And I wound up writing at least about like almost like 200 pages worth of poetry in that time period from 2014 to 2017. And by the time I was ready to publish this manuscript, this underground literary zine called Bad Jacket had entered the picture, and I was publishing stuff through them in their magazine. And I asked them, would you ever consider publishing this manuscript? And they said, well, we don't publish anything that big, but if you could split it into thirds, because a chapbook is no more than like 50 pages, we could maybe, publish like, 3 different chapbooks of your poetry. And that's what became the Murder City Special Trilogy, which was Murder City Special, which I released in September of 2017, Portrait, which was released in December 2017, and Death of the Ladies' Man, which was published in August of 2018, last year. And each one had sort of like a particular theme. Like, firstly, I kind of cut out almost like 75 pages worth of poetry, just the stuff that like I wrote in the moment and it did well, but it didn't hold any substance. So I cut that all out, and I had like enough for like 3 different books. Murder City Special is just all about living that drunk South City life. Portrait is about like the stuff that's very important to me. Like, the title poem is a almost like 10-page poem that's sort of like a dedication to my mom, who had died like 10 years prior. And Death of the Ladies' Man is all about just sort of these observations of the pitfalls and perils of dating in the 21st century, whilst having like some of the sort of leftover stuff that didn't fit any of the first two. Mm-hmm. And right after that was when I started to get to know some people from Kansas City, who had their own publication called Spartan Press, and they were based out of Bell, Missouri, because there's actually this arts community called the Osage Arts Community, who give writers a sort of like I'm trying to find the right word for it. I'm having a little bit of a brain fart, but they basically, you can go down there and sort of live a sort of artist life for a brief period and just focus on your writing for a little bit.
Okay.
I've not been able to do it, but just because I love my job too much to not take that much time off from it.
Like a retreat or something?
Sort of like that. Like there's... I'll probably think of the word like 10 seconds after this interview's right. over.
We'll overdouble, we'll drop it
yeah,
in there.
Yeah. But they loved my work as well as some of the other artists in St. Louis, and they love publishing Midwestern poets, because the problem with literature is that if you're not on a coast, it's almost like you don't matter. And I think that's true with a lot of art, unfortunately, which is their loss, because I've been seeing some of the truest art is coming out of the Midwest right now.
Yeah.
At least in my opinion, like being down in Memphis, being up in Chicago and over in Kansas City, like I'm seeing more truth that would have been coming out of New York 50 or 60 years ago, or LA, but now it's coming out of the Midwest, because I think, nothing against those cities, God love them, but it's almost like there is too much noise for any one voice to sort of rise out of that right now. The only truth is, coming out of the Midwest, I think, at this point. And I think also that, just Midwesterners have a predilection towards just being truthful, whether it pisses people off or not. Like, you're not out to, like, piss somebody off and fight them like a New Yorker, or just being sort of, oh, I don't care about you the way, like, someone from L.A. would, but you know, or just what those stereotypes are. But a Midwestern is like, yeah, thought that was shit, but you're still a good person. Whatever.
Well, you mentioned a couple of your friends, RC, mm-hmm. And stuff, and you all are putting on this party. Let's get into some of this. This will be a release of your latest book, right?
Yes, Rodeo of the Soul. Actually, all three of us are going to have books out for that. Denmark Lane has Thorazine Ice Cream Parlor. Black Magic is by R.C. Patterson. All three of the books are coming out by Spartan Press. They're available right now online, but we're going to have sort of like a big sort of launch party for them at Floodplain down on Cherokee Street, which is 3151 Cherokee. It's between Style House and Tower Taco.
Nice. Yeah, man. Along with you three artists, writers, we'll also have some live music, right?
Yes. We'll be backed up by a bunch of artists. Nick Gussman is going to be backing up Denmark Lane. Mumblebee, which is the project of Frankie Manis, is going to be backing me up. And local blues musician named Alana Harmon is going to be backing up R.C. Patterson.
Okay. So they're playing. So, like, how's that work?
Well, it's going to be like how... I've been performing a few times at Joe's Cafe, and Joe's Cafe's been having this thing where an artist will do two sets. At the beginning of the second set, they'll have a poet speak. Mm-hmm. And the musicians will just back them up, just play sort of like incidental music.
Right.
And I've done that twice. Once with Diesel Island, which I was trying so hard not to fanboy being on stage with a couple of the Bottle Rockets.
Yeah.
And the second time I did it was with Brotherly and the Leather Jackals. And I was, even though those guys are my friends, I was trying hard like not to like freak out and be a fanboy, because I'm always going to be a fanboy at heart.
All those guys are... I've been the same way anytime I'm around those guys. They're rock stars to me, man. Even though they're my buddies, I still,
right.
still get a little... part of me gets excited about hanging out with rock stars. And
mm-hmm. But they were performing this sort of incidental music behind me. And actually, Denmark Lane is actually going to be performing with Beth Bambara backing him up this coming Thursday at Joe's Cafe, as well as, you know, two amazing sets from Beth Bambara, who never has an off night.
Yeah.
So they're going to be sort of backing us up while we have an actual... Brian Geisen Dream Machine, because it's going to be called Dream Machine Poetry. We've been into that sort of idea that they had of any state that can be achieved chemically can be achieved naturally, and we're into sort of psychedelic ideas and things like that. So, you know, we're going to have it sort of be sort of a full kind of experience.
Yeah, that sounds cool, man. So is there? Again, May 25th.
Yes.
At Floodplain.
Yes.
Is there a cover charge?
No cover.
No cover? Free night. Come on out. And
free night, free booze, free music, free poetry.
And you'll have books available?
Yes. That will be the one thing that will cost. Right. We'll have all of our current works along with selected things that we have done in the past.
Mm-hmm. Nice, man. That sounds like a lot of fun. I'm excited to come. Hopefully you can make it out there and check it out and see what it's all about. Sounds a little different than anything I've really been a part of, you know. Especially I don't get to make it out to a lot of the open mics like you're mm-hmm. talking about, or the our different poetry readings. So it's like it'd be fun to, for me personally, to try something a little different too. Like I'm all about, you know, just keep continuing. I mean, that's why I do the show. Yeah. Getting to meet all kinds of people, getting to continue to expand and grow and stuff. So it'd be fun to come check it out, man.
Well, yeah, definitely come check it out. I mean, this is by no means sort of like, you know, the sort of high point of us, but, you know, it is sort of that sort of stepping into the next level of trying to, you know, go for something more, because we've been doing poetry now. Separately, we were doing it for a few years, but we've been running together now for about 5 years. And this is definitely sort of like a little, you know, bit of a landmark. And, you know, the great thing about doing this now is that you know, it feels like everyone who we started out with has sort of like made their bones. So it's like, you know, this is just, you know, us kind of seeing what other people are doing and just sort of keeping up in our own way, mm-hmm. you know, if that makes sense.
Do you find like as a Roman, because like I always just really thought of like writing as more of an individual thing, you know? And
it very much can be. And that's one of the sort of drawbacks from it is that, you know, writer scenes are sometimes more difficult to get together because one of the great things about music is that you're inherently drawn towards performing in public and you will meet, you know, cool people more easily than being a writer and just sort of being off to your own thing. But because we chose to read our poetry and do all the stuff, like, that sort of forced us out in public to where we met other people who were doing the same thing. And, you know, I'm trying to find the right words for this. Like, we're at a point now where we have the legitimacy, and, you know, I think we couldn't have really gotten to that point without finding each other all out. And a lot of that involves just sort of getting out there, because you could write the greatest thing in the world, be it a poem or a song or, you know, making a painting, but if you don't bring it out to the world, no one's ever going to know about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm guessing you find strength in numbers then as you all work together, like it's kind of helped make things grow faster and better? Or
Yeah, strength in numbers as well as just sort of being able to sort of pull away and sort of do your own thing.
Right.
Because, you know, as with anything, you know, nothing gets done on your own, but sometimes you do need that little moment to, you know, sort of say like, okay, how do I do this to where it's specifically mine?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all about sort of finding that balance, that sweet spot.
Sure.
You know, you can sort of grow as an individual while your art, you know, hopefully gets better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you three, especially since on this show and stuff, the three of you together, do you find yourself being competitive with each other, like trying to outdo anybody or anything like that? Or
I think there is something to be said for that. I mean, the three of us are so different in our styles, like, you know, neither one of us could do what the other does, but, you know, I think there is that sort of friendly competitive nature where, mm-hmm. and not just with the three of us, but, like, you know, one of my favorite songwriters in the city is Neil C. Luke. You know, to me, he is probably one of the best songwriters to come around in a long time. And
one of the best dudes.
Oh, God, yeah.
Great guy.
I owe many a bad night that turned good to that man.
Yeah.
You know? You know, he's one of those people that just never lets you be down. Like,
right.
He's like, there's always something.
Yep.
And, you know, I got a lot of my work ethic from just hanging out with him for a couple years there. But, you know, I'll see that, you know, like, oh, that was a really good line he had in that Old Soul song. Or, you know, Steve Lickenbrock from Traveling Sound Machine will show me something and I'm like, oh, that's really cool. And then I'll show them something and they'll kind of go with that. So it's always this sort of thing where, like, I think it's getting to the point where all scenes are kind of all pushing each other up because no one's going to make it on their own. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if you had the choice of being Elvis or the Beatles, I would choose being a part of the Beatles because at the very least, you know, other people are going to know what you're going through as opposed to just sort of being off, being an island to yourself. Cause you know, he may have been palling around with Johnny Cash and Carl Perkins, but those two had no idea what Elvis himself was actually going through. Mm-hmm. Shit. But yeah, there, I think it's at a point to where we're all building each other up and we're all kind of pushing each other along to where, you know, it's almost kind of like the bar keeps on setting itself a little bit higher and a little bit higher. And it's not like straight across, like, you know, obviously because everyone comes from like different, you know, avenues of life that, you know, what one person does, it doesn't necessarily, you know, relate to what another person does, but, you know, if they get inspired by it and that forces that person to push themselves along, then, you know, it just makes things better and better. And I'm kind of surprised that the bubble hasn't burst yet on St. Louis, because I feel at this point it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when someone kind of rises through the ranks, and you know, people notice like, oh, there is something of value in this city.
Yeah, man, for sure. You you mentioned earlier also about lyrics and you know songwriting mm-hmm. and stuff a little bit, but like, have you, is that something you've kind of explored in the past? And
I was in a lot of, well, not a lot of, like a few bands growing up, but none of them hardly ever made it past like a couple of gigs.
Yeah.
The most notable one was this sort of folk punk band I was a part of called Snow Frogs, which only lasted for about like a year or two. But yeah, we had a singular album that we recorded on an iPhone. Just, you know, we almost kind of did like Robert Johnson, where we just like kind of put it on a stool in the middle of the basement, hit record, and then 3 hours later we had enough material. Apart from that, I recorded a solo EP, just me and a guitar, about 2011, 2012. And the last thing I recorded, was for this potential project, which unfortunately never took off, which is unfortunate because I felt that there could have been something there, called The Violent Puppets, which you can find on Bandcamp. It was myself, Corey Perkins from Bounce House, and this gentleman named Louis Condoleri, who came from the Nelly School. And unfortunately, it never got past that first EP. And it was sort of like sort of crunchy 90s guitar rock, basically, you know, with me singing like Lou Reed, as I want to do. That's the best you can get out of me. Either that, or I'll just sing really deep in sort of an off-key blues voice.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking, because like hearing some of your stories and things, like a guy like Shel Silverstein comes mm-hmm. to mind, like who, you know, obviously was, had tons of poetry and stuff, but also wrote, had, you know, songwriting credits mm-hmm. and stuff too. So I think that was really cool how you could do both and, mm-hmm. you know, be very successful and, yeah. and stuff with all that.
Yeah, it's been something that I've wanted to sort of dip back into, but you know, it's things get, you know, so busy that, you know, it's all just about sort of finding the time to just sit down and try to come up with, you know, ideas for a song, because, you know, one of the great freedoms of poetry is that you don't necessarily have to rhyme, you just have to write about what's coming out of your heart in the moment. Sure. And I almost kind of, you know, in a sense, it's almost like I forgot that discipline. And I kind of need to relearn that. But I'd be down for doing it again sometime, because mm-hmm. I always had a lot of fun doing it.
Yeah. You, do you have like, any kind of like, practices? Do you like push yourself to write something every day, or is there anything like that? Like,
I wish I could say I did, but like, you know, I am always thinking about it. Right. Like, I'm either writing. If I'm not writing, I'm editing. And if I'm not doing the two of those, I'm thinking of, I'm almost like got just my radar out to just sort of think about like stuff to write about.
Right.
So it is almost like an all encompassing thing that I'm just thinking about, you know, like on a day to day basis. So,
sure.
But you know, I try to write at least 5 days a week. You know, and if not, I go kind of into a little private panic about it.
Yeah. I'm kind of the same way with this show. Like, I mean, I record a lot, but yeah, there's also behind the scenes is mm-hmm. editing and all the other stuff yeah. I do. I don't edit much, but there is some of it. But that, you know, it's like if I don't do it, if I don't record the show for a while, I do definitely get a little antsy and stuff. Just kind mm-hmm. of just need that kind of creative release, you know, to get out there and do something. And so I imagine it's probably the same for you for writing and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, if you gotta, you feel like you gotta get you these thoughts out there.
Well, yeah, and you know, I've been trying to force myself to not drive myself crazy about that, because you know, sometimes just, you know, the well's dry and you just sort of need to like stop what you're doing and walk away from it. You know, William Burroughs said this thing: cheat your landlord if you can and must, but never cheat the muse. And I kind of, you know, abide by that philosophy. So, you know, there are days where just nothing's coming out. And on days like that, where just my mind feels blank, it's like, okay, I'm just going to throw my hands up and just sort of enjoy myself that mm-hmm. day, because the last thing you want to do is just beat yourself against a brick wall, because all you're going to do is make yourself bleed.
Yeah, man. Well, I feel like you got to live a little life to have something to write about, too.
So exactly.
So it's very important to get out and go see that band, or go to that, you know, live, have that life experience and stuff, so you can, you know, even it help you also be more relatable and everything else, you know, like, because if you're writing about stuff that nobody knows about or whatever, then but yeah, man, that's for sure. Like, I think the same thing with songwriting and stuff too. Like, I think with those guys, like, you can't sit there and just practice all the time. You got to go out and have something to write about and stuff.
Yeah.
But you were saying something earlier, maybe potentially going out on tour.
Yes. Last year, I made a couple trips out to San Francisco, and I absolutely fell in love with the city. And I did a couple open mics out there, and they gave me a whole bunch of love. First time I went out there, I got a standing ovation for my work, which, you know, like, the self-deprecating person voice, like, in the back of my head, like, just kind of stopped for a second and just said, "I got nothing." Like, you know, like, these people don't owe you that, but they're giving you it. So take it. This is your Rocky moment.
Man.
Last week I was out in Salina, Kansas, for a little writer retreat. Like, there was this big sort of poetry thing happening through Spartan Press, and had an absolute blast of a time. And from that, you know, I got a lot of opportunities, and I'm now kind of looking at in late September, early October, heading out to Kansas City, San Francisco, New York, Pittsburgh, and maybe a couple other towns, depending on how emails go. But yeah, I'm looking to take sort of like a week off work and just sort of hit up a lot of other towns, just to get my work out there and get the word about me going, because, you know, you can only do the same thing so many times before you have to do something else.
Sure.
But yeah, that's going to be hopefully in, you know, the coming months. I wanted to do it sooner, but unfortunately, his circumstances prevented it to where that wasn't the case.
Right. Yeah. You've made mention of Seinfeld and Larry David and Titus, Rocky. We are surrounded by Jaws and Back to the Future and different movies and stuff. And would you ever want to get into something like that, writing TV or movies or anything?
When I was in college, I actually tried writing a movie with a friend, because I started out with script writing right around the same time that I was in my first couple of bands, but it just sort of never took off. The writing part of it was great, but when we had to get into the practical approach of, like, okay, now how do we actually make this, it just sort of fell apart. But it would be something that I would love to do. It's just sort of like waiting for the right opportunity to come along. I took actually some of those things that I wrote in script form, turned them into short stories, and that's, you know, something that, you know, is sort of like on my radar right now, is writing a collection of short stories. But sometime down the road, I mean, you know, writing is writing at the end of the day, and it comes in many forms. And because I started out doing it, yeah, I would love to revisit it.
Yeah. I think that's just, like, cool, too. Like, a guy like Kevin Smith, you know, that kind of can have that idea for Clerks and then, you know, blew up into a, you know, giant career for him and stuff. But, like, very, very minimalist, low budget kind of starting. And now he's doing all kinds of huge things.
Well, and that was kind of what inspired me and my friends to do it, because we looked at just how cheap Clerks was, and the fact that it was done on a handheld, and he basically just maxed out a bunch of credit cards to get the production to make the movie, although I do not recommend doing that.
Right.
Even he doesn't. Sure. But, you know, that was just sort of a thing of, like, seeing how cheaply even Reservoir Dogs by Quentin Tarantino was, that, you know, it is literally the bulk of it. That almost could have been like a one-act play, pretty much, because it just takes place largely in, you know, the factory that they go into after, you know, the robbery goes awry. Like, Tarantino and Kevin Smith were two big influences for myself when I was trying to script write, because they did dialogue in a way that was almost sort of poetic in its own sense, because just they knew the beats of language and how to make a line really hit the mark.
Yeah, Tarantino is like one of the guys that, like, you know, especially like Pulp Fiction and stuff. Like, I mean, some of the dialogue that he puts in there is like, I mean, just it's amazing, man. He, like, it's just some really well written. I mean, the whole scene, but the lines, especially, and then the way that of course that Samuel Jackson and John Travolta like go back and forth with some of those lines and stuff. Like, and it's just like so good, man. He's one of my favorites for sure to watch.
Well, and that's, I guess, the kind of stuff that I'm drawn to, is like the sort of stuff that makes something out of nothing. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when I talk to people and people say there's nothing going on with their lives, I get a little disappointed, because there's always something happening. It's just a matter of how you view it. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if, you know, Seinfeld could, you know, for example, take, you know, leaving a message on someone's machine and turn it into the most physically awkward thing you could ever possibly watch. You know, everything is happening in people's lives somehow, some way, that, you know, there's always something happening, and there's something beautiful and artistic about it, at least in my opinion. So, you know, that's sort of, you know, thing that I always kind of look for, is like those little, like, gaps in society where there is no real right or wrong answer. You just try to not look, you try to look as little awkward as possible.
Right. Yep. Well, that's pretty much where I'm at in life. Just trying not to look awkward as possible.
Yeah.
You, well, so we got this party again, May 25th, 7 o'clock, free show. We got Dan, we got RC,
Denmark.
Yeah. And so come on out to that show again, A Floodplain on Cherokee. And is it, I don't know, I haven't been over there, is that like is it just an event space or a bar?
It's basically sort of like an art gallery. Okay. It used to be Fort Gondo, and they've had a lot of really cool events there, like in the past couple years. And yeah, it's going to be just sort of a low-key sort of thing. It's going to be three amazing poets, three amazing musicians, a bunch of great poetry for sale, and we're going to have about at least a cooler's worth of beer, if nothing else. So whatever's left over from my birthday party.
Yeah. You, I know around town you're known as Dam, right, a lot also. When did that get started, the nickname?
I tend to credit Ellen Cook with being the first one to call me Dan Wright, because when she had an open mic at Foam, which she would co-host with Langen Neubacher, and I think Fred Friction might have been a part of that at the time, she would always call me up to the stage saying, "Damn right, Dan Wright." And she was the one that just sort of, she was the first one I remember, you know, calling me that, and so I was kind of attributed to her. And since then, it just sort of took off as just sort of a thing that people call me.
Yeah, well, that's a good one for sure. Yeah. That should be like, should market that though. It should be there. I mean, there should be like, we need some Damn Right, you know, stickers or shirts or something.
Oh, believe me, the thought has crossed my mind.
But that's the next thing, merchandising.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, you know, I've gotten about as much cool publicity as possible. Like, the cover for my second book is actually on the side of Livery 3 if you ever go in.
Okay. Yeah. I haven't been over there yet to Livery yet.
So the third iteration, it's really cool. It's down on South Broadway. Yeah. And, you know, you can always rely on seeing at least a couple of friendly faces in there, and there's always a fun time to be at.
Yeah, no, I know they do a lot of great things for my friends. A lot of my friends play over there quite a bit. Between two jobs doing the show and everything else, I just don't have time to do all the fun things I want to get to do. But and, you know, working in the industry, I'm working at Broadway Oyster Bar, so it's like it's hard to get out and make it to the bars whenever you're working in one. So,
yeah.
But yeah, man, I definitely want to come check that out and see some of your work and hopefully pick up your new latest book, Rodeo of the Soul.
Yeah.
So, are you going to put that online afterwards?
It's actually for sale online right now at Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. So you can pick up a copy right now if you don't want to wait till the 25th.
Do you have any locally around town?
Not as of yet. Like, the 25th is just going to be sort of like the big release for it. And yeah, from there, I'm just going to try to promote it as much as possible without being annoying. So,
well, hopefully I can help help you out with that and not be as annoying. You know. But you can also follow Daniel W. Wright, Writer on on Facebook.
Yes,
that's your official page.
Yeah, Daniel W. Wright Writer page. That's my official thing. And hopefully by the end of this year, I'm gonna have an actual website up. There's been a lot of things that I've been sort of looking into towards adding to sort of marketing and advertising. That's it's something that you eventually have to look into when you get to a certain level, is that, you do kind of have to be your own, manager, which I don't mind. I've already had, half a dozen conversations with myself this morning. So, keep an eye out for a personal webpage coming up in the next few months or so. And till then, check me out on my official Facebook page and hit a like, and hopefully I will see you at a reading soon.
Yeah, or come into a town near you on tour, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, keep an eye out. Things happening. But yeah, Dan, I really appreciate you doing this, man. It's been really a lot of fun getting to know a little bit more about what you're up to. And So I thank you for doing it, and let's do it again soon, man.
Oh, can't wait, man.
All right, thanks, buddy.
Thanks.
Bye, everyone.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Well, yeah, that was it.